Today's episode is angled to be about parenting and motherhood, but really can be applied to all facets of life. Dr. Leah and I discuss the seemingly ominous concept of pivoting from our original plan, whether that be how or where your child sleeps, using a pacifier, or screen time habits, to name a few. Adapting and changing course is an inescapable part of raising children, and we've demonized it as this thing that is so hard, so much so that you should never start off on the quote-unquote wrong side of a habit in the first place. We talk about mental resiliency and acceptance for what is the reality before us with the particular child that we have in the particular circumstance of our life, and how we have to adapt to that in the moment. Because if we don't, we increase our own suffering, and sometimes setting our expectations right will help us to either avoid or move through the micro griefs that come with ordinary aspects of parenting. This is a fun one, so let's dive in.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
True hydration comes from a mix of water and minerals, not water alone. And while we love to discuss the benefits of Redmond Relight powders for you parents in the fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum times of your life, let's not forget about the kids. Redmond has launched their Relight Kids line of electrolyte powders, specifically with kids in mind. The mineral amounts and proportions are lessened to be more appropriate for children or for adults who want or need less sodium intake. They come in three fantastic flavors that my children love: pineapple, pink lemonade, and grape, and contain all the benefits of Redmond's honorable manufacturing and quality control practices. They contain the 60 plus trace minerals in just the salt portion alone, and we know how much metabolic support childhood demands, so support your kiddo in their sports and play recovery, growth, energy production, and more with Relight for Kids. You can use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off at redmond.life, and use the code to also enjoy the other Redmond products like their natural toothpastes, seasoning salts, bentonite clays for baths, and more. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%.
I am so excited for today's episode. I always love having our sessions together, Dr. Morgan. And this one is going to be all about pivoting the plan in parenting and managing expectations and just all of the things that we navigate as parents as things come up. And I feel like you being a parent of four, I'm now a parent of two. We can kind of chat about our experiences, and your oldest is now nine, right? Gage is nine.
Crazy.
Wow. That blows my mind. And yeah, let's just dive in and talk about this, because I think we often see on social media when everything's perfect or, you know, all the things we should be doing or whatever, but what happens when that's not what happens, when that's not the reality in front of you, and how do we manage parenting in the real world?
Yes. So I wanted to make an entire episode about this because it's just something that I think you learn in your own time as a parent, but there's not really that many people talking about it. And I feel like for the newer ones or ones with younger kids, it could be something that you have sort of sitting in your subconscious that's like, oh, this is like okay to do, because we read a lot of dogmatic, you know, black and white parenting advice. You do this, you don't do this, you blah, 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 blah. I try not to contribute to that kind of extremist mentality, although I know I probably do in my own ways, because we all have our bias and our worldview and our lens. But I think that it's important to call out the fact that when we are now parenting, it's not just about our wishes and wants. Yes, we are the parents, of course, and we are the ones that are going to set the rules and things. But we also have to be, we have to have like a softness to the edges of those boundaries that we create and make room for like what is the reality before us with our particular mm-hmm. child and like their, you know, temperament and their particular needs and where they're at with, you know, sickness and teething and developmental leaps and all these different things where it's like, okay, yeah, you might have it in your head that you're going to sleep train this weekend, and then your kid starts to pop a tooth and they have a runny nose. It's like, is that a good time to do that right now? Like, maybe not. Yes, you as the mm-hmm. parent, you can make these choices and decisions, I guess, if you really want to, but I guess I would just encourage the idea of reading into the reality. And maybe that feels really obvious in that example, but I feel like there's a lot of other examples that are more nuanced. Like, for instance, pacifiers. This is some mm-hmm. like a fight that I was seeing online in one of my comments of my posts. I was just saying that it was like a 10 things that I wish everyone knew about 12-month-olds. And I was saying as one of my points that it is a good time around 12 months to try to remove the pacifier. Because as we know, as they become older toddlers and they are really, really attached to things, their, you know, emotional outbursts and tantrums and their awareness of things changes so fast, and it's so amazing and complex, but also can make things like that difficult, more difficult to remove than when they're in this sort of in between and they're like a little bit less attached, I guess I should say. And so I was just saying that, and then people were commenting and fighting about like, well, like no 12-month-old, some people were saying the take that no 12-month-old should still have a pacifier. And then others were saying, my kids suck their pacifier until like halfway through kindergarten and they are totally fine. It didn't mess up their teeth, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, whatever. You're going to mm-hmm. do your thing. But I think some people are completely terrified of starting pacifiers in the first place because they feel like, I can never start this bad habit. And there's a lot of like this bad habit rhetoric that we hear where it's like, never yeah. feed your baby to sleep. Never give your baby a pacifier because now you're going to have this like crutch that you can never take away. And it's just so funny mm-hmm. because it's like, things are always changing in parenting. You are always having to adapt to a new phase of what's happening, where they're at, what's, you know, even possible. So like having to take out just like the infant insert in a car seat will change the comfortability of your baby. And now they maybe don't like the car seat as much or whatever it is, but we have to, or, you know, your baby loved being swaddled, but now they're 4 months old and they're rolling over and you can't swaddle them anymore. So you're going to have to break that comfort habit, whatever it is. Yeah. And I think that we get really afraid of that time period of that transition. It can feel really daunting. And it's like, we're looking ahead into this, like, how am I going to get rid of this thing? Like, da-da-da. And I guess I just want to encourage the idea that it's okay for us to use the tools in the moment that are working. And then when it doesn't work anymore for you, for the kid, for both of you, whatever, then yeah, you're going to have to make change. And it's just like anything. It's just like anything.
I think the best way to see parenting is seasons.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how we see women's health too, even though I feel like women's health seasons can move really rapidly. Like, I'm in the season of birth control. I'm in the season of not being on birth control. I'm in the season of trying to conceive. I'm in the season of being pregnant. I'm in the season of wanting to not be pregnant. Like, there's all of these different seasons, but parenting has seasons and they move really fast, you know? Like, I was talking to one of our friends, Dr. Alana, about sleeping because she saw that I had a bassinet in the room. And she's like, wait, tell me about this because I've only ever had my kids sleep in the bedroom. And I'm like, well, I sleep with them in the bed for a season, right? But then I start to transition them to the bassinet, and that's a different season. And, you know, just like with you with the pacifier, there might be a season when this is really beneficial. And then maybe a season, for example, my sister sucks her fingers with, or my sister, oh my God, my brain, my daughter.
I was like, really?
My daughter sucks her fingers. And there was a time and a place where that, it was so helpful in that season, because she could self-soothe and she could put herself to sleep, and we were all getting so much sleep as a family, and it was great. And now we're in a season where it's not serving us as much because she goes out into the world and touches everything and puts it in her mouth, you know? And it's just, but at the same time, I wouldn't go back and change it necessarily because it gave us so much joy and sleep in that moment. So yeah, I hear what you're saying. And I think people forget it's not this one thing that you only do ever. It's like, what is working right now in this season?
Okay. You just reminded me of something. It's like that concept in therapy and with trauma where it's like we in our childhoods learn like coping mechanisms mm-hmm. to deal with what's happening in front of us. But then where – and that's great because it's adaptive and we need to do it. But then where we have problems and like why there's so many adults in therapy and things is because we often will not let those go. Those coping mechanisms, we don't ever drop them. Oops. And so – then now we're adults and we are still acting a certain way to deal with cope with a certain situation or whatever. And it's like just the same thing with sucking fingers. So like, yeah, my son sucked his thumb until he was 4 and a half. And we had to do like a 30-day program with a myofunctional therapist. And because I didn't really see a way to get him to stop doing it, it was really tricky just like you're saying, it was wonderful for that mm-hmm. first couple of years because he slept amazing and he could self-soothe when I weaned him. And I felt like he was really cozy and comfy. And like, he just, you know, it was his way of helping himself. And it is harder when kids don't have any of those coping skills. And I've had a couple of those kids too, who never sucked thumbs and never took pacifiers. And it's just you as the human, mm-hmm. you know, comforter, which is great. And I also think that that's important, but it's also makes life trickier. And in this modern world, we have a lot of other things going on, like work and whatever and responsibilities, where it just is harder. It's not like our only one sole job is to nurse the baby all day long. But anyway, I think it's just like that, where things will time out. Like mm-hmm. for my son at 4.5, it was like, you don't need to be sucking your fingers anymore. And actually now we're bleeding into an edge where this is detrimental to your teeth and your development and whatever, your speech or whatever, you know, it's like, get your fingers out of your mouth, be in the world, talk, like, let's do, you know. And so it's the same kind of thing with kids in all sorts of different realms. And I think that people are so afraid to start a bad habit because they think like they'll never get out of it. And it's like, just do what works, especially in the very beginning. I think, you know, there's so many people that are just so fearful around, particularly with sleep, I would say. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it feels almost like, I mean, I don't know, if someone's like me, whose sleep is the number one thing in their life, I mean, that is my number one determinant of health above everything else. It's almost a panic moment where you're like, oh my gosh, if I don't have sleep, I mean, you know, and it is hard because I've shared this before along our infertility journey. I got to observe a lot of my friends and other people who were doing certain things. And I personally chose to do the type of sleep that worked for me because I did see more long-term impacts in the sense of people who their kids only slept in the bed and like it was harder for them to transition. It's not impossible. And just doing sort of a hybrid model. But yeah, I would say around sleep is the biggest scare and concern because it just impacts you so much and it impacts the whole family and people do panic and they're like, what do I do right or wrong? But then at the same time, what I was telling Alana is my babies eat really well, so they can go these long stretches. So I can put them in the bassinet and leave, you know, 5 hours of, they can be there for 5 hours without needing to nurse. And she said her kids have to nurse, you know, every hour, every 2 hours. And that would be very different. So if she hears someone saying, oh, well, you need to put them in the bassinet, maybe not for her child because she'd have to wake up, physically stand up, get the child out of the bassinet every hour. That would be terrible. So the moms who say, I sleep better with them in the bed, that's probably because that's their baby who needs to nurse all night. I sleep better with my child out of the bed because I get longer stretches uninterrupted. So that's the other thing that people have to remember too. I know we're talking about pivoting, which is more within our own self, but just knowing that every baby is so different. And you've had that experience with all of your kids because they've all been different.
Yeah. And no one mentions that. They're like, okay, you're going to do that, like, you know, 12 hours by 12 weeks sleep training program with your baby. And this is the only way to do it. And it's like, cool. Somebody might have the experience where that worked for them. And they're like, see, I just followed. It's like a feedback loop that helped, you know, makes you think like, oh, see, I did it right or whatever.
Like, and
it's
an echo chamber. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. It's like, cool. That's great for you. That works. Mm-hmm. I'm really happy. And it's hard for people who don't have the experience of, you know, mothering a different type of child to think that it wouldn't work that way. Right. And I was the exact same way until I had Sloan. I would have said the same thing, like, oh no, you just didn't do it right or whatever. I don't know. I would have had my internal judgments. And it's just funny. And this is the gift in having a bigger family and having more kids. And also just having more years of anything that we do under our belts, like jujitsu instructors, as you know, a 3 year long old, not old, but I mean, has been doing this for 3 years versus somebody who has been doing it for 15 or 20 years. Obviously they're going to have a completely different set of experiences. And this is what wherein lies like wisdom, right? Like it's mm-hmm. the blend of experience and knowledge. And Sloan taught me so many lessons in that, like, her temperament, I should say, like, she would not cry during the day that much. She did go through a period, Wes will tell a different story. He's like, that chick never stopped crying, he would say, between 1 and 2 years old. But for me, the hardest sleep part was 0 to 12 months old, or like really like 4 months to 12 months, somewhere in there. It was okay in the beginning. It was kind of like normal, or maybe I just handled it better. But then it got so bad and it stayed so bad. And in the middle of the night, she was inconsolable. Like, she'd be a happy baby in the daytime, but oh my God, like she just and nothing. We tried multiple times to sleep train her and failed. It was clearly not working. It was not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And we tried a couple of different methods. We tried the things that we had done, you know, with our other two kids that worked well. And anyway, I think that experience just showed me, like, it is a blend. Parenting, mothering, and I mean, all of life, of course, but this is what we're talking about here in this episode and on this podcast. And like when you are talking about fertility factors and preconception and birth control and hormones and all these different things, it's like the same. We're all looking at the truth remains that how we manage and deal with our health and our babies and in our parenting experience is a blend of having a goal that is like based on education of some kind. It's based on information and knowledge of, like, maybe you read a book or you have this idea, whatever it is, or it's your intuition because you're like, of course I'm going to just sleep next to my babies. And for that particular type of person, it's like, yeah, I understand that. And I actually agree with that. And I do think that that's the most biological, physiologically probably correct, if you had to say, because that's where we adapted from way. But given our modern day, a lot of people do have sleep sensitivities and different needs and different things where like co-sleeping is not going to work for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. But anyway, we have to take our goal and then we have to mix it with the baby in front of us, the mm-hmm. actual, like, you know, their temperament. And then we have to mix it with like a little bit of our intuition of kind of what's happening also like through this. And then with reality, it's like a stacked pyramid, and not fight the reality in front of us. And this is something I was talking about the other day in just like an Instagram rant. Was one of the benefits of therapy in my mind has been learning these very key tools. Like for me, one of them was this therapist was pointing out to me that I was constantly trying to fight reality. Mm-hmm. And she was really helping me realize that is going to just continue. I'm never going to get out of suffering in whatever it is that I find hard and overwhelming about parenting if I'm denying, that's what she would call it, if I'm denying the reality before me. Because I would explain like, well, this is a, but da, 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 and she'd be like, yeah, but this is happening. Like, mm-hmm. period. It is. It just is. So now what, you know? And I love that because it really, I won't be able to like explain it in the way that was so mind blowing for me, because I think I just thought I had that sense of control that I'd had for the rest of my life prior to having kids. And I think that when you're a very like type A or high control or high achieving, like, you know, being in higher education and all those different things, like we've talked about this before. Or if you're in a higher up position in your job and you're used to like having a lot of responsibility and a lot of control and a lot of like, what's another word for control that I'm trying to think of? Like
influence?
Influence or impact, or like ability to kind of like work things in the way that you want.
Yeah.
And then now you have kids and it's just not like that anymore. And obviously you can try. It doesn't have to be just throw your hands up and let the kid rule the roost. Of course not. But it is more difficult, I think, for that type of personality than the one who is like very maybe in that yin feminine energy all the time anyway, who's just sort of like go with the flow and mm-hmm. they're a lot more adaptable and they don't fight reality just sort of by their default personality type, whatever. Like those types of women, you know, we've talked about this in the past. We really need to do this. We need to make an Ayurveda episode, because yes, I think that it would be really cool to talk about this. And so for people who don't know what Ayurveda is, it's like the sister science to yoga, I guess you could think about it. It's like what the people in India, their sort of like medical and philosophical system is through this lens of these three types of constitutional types. They call them doshas, D-O-S-H-A. And so the doshas are vata, pitta, and kapha. And we learned about it in medical school, and I just think that it's such a smart, beautiful way of looking at health and systems mm-hmm. and constitutions and types of people. You know, like it's not, but I guess for the types of people who want like an analogy, it would be sort of like saying the types of people who are different Enneagram numbers, or their Myers-Briggs personality, or yep. your horoscope, like you're a Aries versus you're a Libra, you're a Enneagram 7 versus an Enneagram 1, like whatever. You know, it's all these different ways that we can like kind of group and our understandings of types of people. And within the doshas, of course, I'm always looking at this through the lens of, or I would look at women through their doshas as like how it applies to their motherhood. And the kapha mom is going to be the one who's adapting to these kinds of things really well. Yeah. and they're just like down for it. And they just kind of like listen to their baby. And, you know, you hear that as parenting advice, like, just go with the flow of your baby. And like that, for someone like me, who's very vata, mm-hmm. is like, what do you mean? like, what do you mean? I don't understand that. And then pittas also, I think, would have a difficult time with some of this because pittas can be a little bit more of that sort of controlling. And then vata is a little bit like flighty and anxious and whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah, the vata is going to tend more toward anxiety. The pitta is going to probably tend more toward anger. You know, like, why aren't you doing what I want you to do? You know, and the cough is just like, whatever. Like, to a fault, right? Like, none of them are better or worse than the other. You know, the goal is to be in balance and not to have one that's too extreme because they all have positives and negatives. But yeah, in that parenting world, and I just want to say this and then you can hop back into the dosha thing, what you're describing and what I think a lot of people, I'm sure now it's becoming less this way, but maybe not, where I think people really think that, and it is a blend, but that you are like your children is the outcome of you in some way.
Yeah.
And I guess there is an element of that, but one of control, like I will control this child into what I need. They will go to bed at this time. They will do this thing. They will eat this food. They will do these things because they are like my, I don't even know what to describe it. Like they're not like my submissives.
Like your mini me. Yeah.
Yeah. Like this person who I can control, and that's just not true. And on the flip side, when you have a really easy baby, it's not necessarily because of you either.
Yeah.
And people will be like, well, I'm just like a really good mom because my baby sleeps. Like I think that sometimes I'm like, gosh, I'm such a good mom because I just put my baby down and he just goes to sleep. And it's like, that has nothing to do with me. You know, it's just my baby has, maybe it has a little bit, but they have these different constitutions, they eat certain well. So it's a blend of your parenting, but also the child is their own person. And I think that people forget that they're on their own path. They have their own lessons. They're their own person. And so, yeah. So in the dosha, like you were talking about, how we then handle what we see in front of us might change based on who we are and our constitution as well.
Yeah. And I would say too, I feel like now after having four kids, that this whole like nature versus nurture conversation, obviously it's both, but I think I used to think it would be so much more nurture, but there is the nature component of kids is undeniable. Like they come out and they are just the way that they are. Obviously, if they are raised in like a completely traumatic environment, they will be completely different than if they were raised in a nurturing environment as at the end game. Yeah. But I just think that we erroneously maybe go into this parenting thing thinking, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to do this. My kid's only ever going to do that. And it's so funny because it's just, it's not, ignorance is not the right word because has such a like negative connotation, but I guess it's just naive.
Yeah.
It's not understanding really what it is, which is this balance of with somebody else, just like with your partner. Like you can't completely control your partner. And if you try, you're going to be miserable and they're probably going to divorce you or break up with you. And with a kid, it's like, you can try to crush them into this little box, but it's going to increase your suffering. And the sooner that you can sort of realize it's not going to be exactly like that, that feels really scary for some people though. Big, huge concept and idea that I'm not going to have control anymore. And I think it is one of the biggest layers to shed in that first time of new motherhood where it's like, holy shit, like this is uncharted territory. I've never been in this kind of a way of life right now where I really don't exactly know what's going on. And I maybe feel like I'm failing because I don't know what's happening. But then, I don't know. Like I have a lot of friends who have really, really rambunctious kids, and I've had my share of that. Not to like an extreme, I don't think, but I have like really talkative kids that never stop talking, but they're not like super, super physical. I mean, Gage was though for like 3 years between 2 and 5, I would say it was like very, very intense. And the a couple of the families that I'm thinking of, one of them particularly, both of the parents are like really chill, really, really calm. And they have like 3 boys, you know, and they just are all over the place. And it's like that household is as calm and, you know, regulated nervous system, regulated emotions as possible. And it's just, it has nothing to do with that. And so I think sometimes when we see these people out in public and it's like, oh, you know, obviously misbehavior, there is things to be said, like when kids are bullying other kids, like that is a learned behavior, but being just like rambunctious, that kind of stuff is whatever it is. But I wanted to touch on something, which is that transitions, like when you are going to make this change, of whatever habit or way of life, whether it's been a sleep crutch or, you know, you used to do shows in the morning and now you're going to take away the shows, or you're going to do any kind of transition that from like, okay, we kids, we used to do it this way and now we're not. Now we're going to do it this way. Or with eating habits. Sometimes I think that that's another big one where like parents will just sort of realize, holy moly, like we've really gotten off the train of eating well, or we're only snacking. Like it's so easy in my house for the kids to just snack all day long and then not want to eat the meals. And it really takes intention from us to say, no, we're not doing that. And then the kid might be hungry a little bit going into the next meal. But you have to do it at some point. It's going to be hard for a couple of days. And this is where the other half of this podcast that I wanted to talk about is this idea of managing expectations, because I feel like I've had this huge revelation that's happened in the last couple of months, slowly, probably actually over this last year, that has helped me so much. And if I can just like explain it and then maybe it settle in on anyone else and then be helpful for them, then I would love to do that, because it has been literally life-changing for me. So first of all, just really quick about the transition. It's going to probably suck. It might not. Who knows? But when you take a baby out of a swaddle and they just have to sleep now without that like cozy, woomy feeling, they're not going to like it for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. When you are going to sleep train a baby, or you're going to night wean, you're going to make some kind of shift from their normal pattern and habit. It's going to be hard. You just have to expect it. That doesn't mean you don't do it though. If it's not working for you anymore, or it's not working for the kid, or it's not safe for them, or you're just done with the thing, whatever it is, you're done with the pacifier. Of course, there's different methods to this transition. You can cut the pacifier slowly in half, or you can bury them in the yard and whatever. There's so many ways to do it. But either way, it's likely to be challenging at some point. It may not be acutely challenging. Maybe this kid seems to be fine with it. And then 2 weeks later, now they're starting to throw some tantrums and you're like, this is probably related. Or like when you add a sibling or whatever it is. But either way, and you know, obviously my hope and wish for everybody is that it's easy and smooth. And sometimes it will be, and that's cool too. But just don't expect it to be easy and smooth, because I feel like then you're just setting yourself up. But that then goes into my next point, which is about expectations. Like, I think that if we can, especially as you have more children, or when your children are very young and it's all very unpredictable, or it can be overwhelming, or, you know, when something doesn't work out, like their patterned day, like if they're supposed to take a nap at a certain time, and then if they don't, it kind of messes up everything. And then there's all that anxiety that can build and the overwhelm from that. I think that when we're in these seasons, like you're mentioning, where there's a lot of moving parts and it feels all very like just kind of hard, you know, mostly when they're younger, I think. But also I hear that the teenage years are similar. So those who have teenagers, you're probably like, yeah, whatever. Everybody keeps telling me recently, I don't know if it's just like what I'm paying attention to, but I've been hearing a lot lately about how, oh yeah, you know, it seems like these years are the hard ones, but like you wait till they're teenagers, which is a concept that isn't new, but I feel like I keep hearing it a lot lately. And I'm kind of like, I don't know what that means. Like, what does that mean? I don't want to jump forward into that time period, but.
Well, and again, it depends on the kid, you know, anyone who was parenting me as a teenager, it would have been a breeze, you know, anybody parenting maybe another child, it wouldn't have been. And sometimes there's easy babies, sometimes there's easy. So everyone interjects their own stuff, which I think is so funny. And on social media, there's so many people and so many opinions that someone's going to have the opinion and the experience of anything you could ever imagine. And that's why I think having the tools like you're going to share with us is so important, because it might not happen for you when they're little, or when they're, you know, in school age, and all of a sudden it is happening for you as a teenager, or not, or vice versa. You know, you might not necessarily get out of that, you know, struggle window, but I think having the tools is important rather than knowing the perfect way to get rid of a pacifier, you know, because you don't know what your struggle is going to be. And so, yeah, keep going about
that. Yeah, you're right. And maybe those people didn't find the chaos of like the unpredictability of a toddler and the mess of a toddler that triggering. And they find the pushback and wish for freedom of a teenager very triggering. Yeah. Like, what, you know, right. So everybody's going
to have whatever people's triggers are, for sure.
Yes, exactly. And now a moment from our sponsor. If you are looking for a delicious and effective immune supplement that your entire family can use, from children through adults and even while pregnant and breastfeeding, look no further than the needed immune support powder. With elderberry, zinc, pre and probiotics, beta-glucans, and arabinogalactans, the needed immune support powder is a very tasty berry treat that you can easily mix into water, yogurt, popsicle recipes, smoothies, gummies, and more. It's something that I always have on hand and give at the first sign of illness to any of my children as well as myself. Give it a try by visiting thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. But so something that I've been doing, I learned this from my husband because he's extremely good at kind of, not that he's negative, he's not at all, he's very optimistic, but he does have a really good mindset around like reality. Again, this is because it's been hard for me to let go of the way that I want things to be and just like settle into what actually is. And he is very good at that. I think because of his childhood, his oldest brother was disabled. Actually yesterday was the, was it yesterday or the day before? It was the 10-year anniversary of Dallas passing away. Yeah, it was a big deal.
Oh my gosh. Wow. 10 years already. Oh my gosh.
So Dallas, just for anybody who hasn't heard the story, he was 2.5 and he drowned in a pool and he actually knew how to swim. So it was a really big mystery how it happened. It was like a, you know, 75-second, 90-second window of time. And he like toddled out the door because it was open because something was burning on the stove. And so the fire alarms were going to be going off. So they opened up the door, had to turn and deal with the kitchen. Boom. It just, that's how fast it can happen, you know? So he didn't die. I mean, he kind of actually did. And then they brought him back, but he was completely brain damaged, you know, lived to be 36 in diapers the whole time in a wheelchair, that kind of a thing. And he was the first child. And, my brother-in-law who lives here on the property with us was 6 months old at the time. And then they conceived Wes really quickly afterwards. So there was like, boom, 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 three boys. And then there was another boy who came. So like I have three brother-in-laws, but there was the four of them. And, you know, growing up in that household for Wes, I think really, really just it impacted and completely. So this is like where nurture comes into play. Like he is so very much, his perspectives on life are so very the way they are because of Dallas. And I am like so eternally grateful to his parents and Dallas for the way that that all went down, because he's just such an amazing man in, because of this, you know, in my opinion. And maybe his base level personality also would have been that way. But I really, really think that he has such a wise grasp on reality. And one of the things that he's taught me over time in how it relates to kids and what I'm trying to get to about expectations is that like, he, when I'm getting overwhelmed, he'll be like, Moses, because he calls me Moses. He's like, what did you expect? He's like, we have four kids under like, you know, 8 or 7 or whatever it was at the time when Sonny was born. And he's like, of course it's going to be like this. Like, I just expect them to cry. I expect it to be wild, you know, because sometimes I can get so overwhelmed in a moment where it's like, everyone needs something, da da da. And so hearing him speak in this way and modeling it for me over these last years that we've been together, it's finally clicked. I don't know. I don't feel like I consciously worked on this, but I have been in therapy though for years too and working on different things and stuff. So, but finally I'm finding my mind. I'm like having a metacognitive experience of watching my brain think about something that, okay, like for instance, right when we were about to record this podcast, Sunday was not falling asleep very well for her nap because she kind of slept in late. It was weird, whatever. And I think old me would have been like, I would have felt a lot more anxiety and panic around that because I'm like, what do I do? Like, we have to record this podcast today because it's going to go out in 2 weeks and like, you don't have time and I don't have time. And of course, like, and Wes is at Costco with the other kids and like, I can't do it now. Like, what am I going to do? You know, da, 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 whatever. Like I would have panicked but I'm finding myself immediately self-soothing internally. Like I'm pep talking myself and my immediate, like as I'm starting to go down that path, I don't even let myself, I cut myself off and I'm just like, well, if she doesn't nap, then like we'll have to reschedule and I'll make time for it another day, which is the reality. Like that is reality. It's not actually impossible. It feels like it would be impossible to reschedule because we're so busy and because this and that, because. Mm-hmm. But actually it's like, no, it's okay. Is it ideal? No. Did you get ready for the day? Did you expect a podcast today? And you really wanted that and you wanted that plan to go and yes, but okay, so whatever. So it doesn't happen. And that is mind-blowing to me because I used to never feel like, okay, but whatever, like in quotes. Yeah. I would never actually – and that's how he has functioned his whole life. He's like, well, whatever. I was like, what do you mean whatever? Because I had set my brain and the way the day was going to go. And I feel like I'm actually a really flexible person. Like I'm a really adaptable, flexible person. I'm not like routinized and – But when I do make a plan and I do have an expectation, and then the disappointment, the letdown, the whatever it is, the feelings I feel from that when it doesn't go to plan the way I wanted it to, I will get sometimes totally emotionally derailed from that. And so like, for example, we were in like a little mountain town where my parents have a condo a couple weekends ago. And, you know, when you take a new kid or you take kids to new places, they don't sleep that well. And especially Sunday had never, she's been very few places in her life where she slept in like a pack and play. Mm-hmm. And she woke up a million times and I was laying there. I slept in a different room so that I could just deal with her. And then Wes was sleeping with the other three. Because they also don't sleep that great in other places. So they're awake, they're, you know, they wake up and they can't find the bathroom, like whatever it is. And so I found myself being annoyed that I was being woken up again. But then I would thought to myself really fast afterwards, and it wasn't even conscious. It's just happening because I guess it's been practiced, but being like, you will sleep again. Like, this sucks right now, but like, you will sleep again. Yeah. Because I think sometimes the finality or the, it feels like it's going to be forever.
Yeah.
When you're in a shitty phase of parenting or a season where it's really hard, it feels like this is just your life now forever. Mm-hmm. And really, everything is temporary, which is like one of my strongest hold parenting mantras. The good stuff is also temporary, though. So like, make sure that you try to soak it up as much as you can. Mm-hmm. But like, I would have never had that mindset. Like, well, yeah, you might not sleep. You might be tired tomorrow. So what? Like, you're not going to die. Like, I have to have this internal dialogue with myself. Do you know what I mean? Do you do this?
Yeah. Well, what you're talking about is surrender, right? And we've talked about this before, the managing expectations. And it's slightly different, but I've shared this experience with me too. I have it less with parenting. I mean, maybe more as my kids get older, I'll have it more. But, you know, a lot of my experience with surrender was along the infertility journey.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about is I have this thing and I want it to go this way. And I do think surrender is the hardest for the people who are really good at manifesting and creating exactly the life that they want and the moment that they want it. You know, the people who get up and it's like, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this and I'm never going to take that. And I'm not ever going to do this thing. And this is exactly how it's going to go. And when it doesn't, you're right. The more you fight the reality that's in front of you, the more suffering that happens. And I think it's a really nuanced and challenging thing because it's not like you said, you just give up and you don't care at all and you don't have a plan for the day or you don't have a plan for your life or a want or a dream or a desire. But then when the thing that you want so badly in that moment isn't happening or it's happening in a different way, how do you accept that? And how do you surrender to that? And honestly, because I just wrote a post about this that's going out today on my Instagram about what our infertility journey taught us. And one of those things was the art of surrendering, but it is a muscle. And so what you're describing to me, how you're saying it's kind of just come out of nowhere and I'm practicing it in my head because it is something that you practice. No one just wakes up and they're like, wow, I now know how to surrender. Or someone told me on Instagram, I should surrender. I'm going to do that. It is a weird experience in my opinion. Maybe some people are just born naturally like that. Like you said, Wes probably had practice, but at a young age of I probably don't want the reality that my oldest brother is disabled and everything in our life is different than my kids, my friends' families and things like that. Like he probably went through the seasons of grief that we go through when things aren't happening the way that we want them to. And it is almost like a grieving process, in my opinion. When you have things that don't go the way that you want, there's a grieving process. And some people get sad and some people get angry and like all of these things. But then you go through these seasons or these stages of almost like a grief. And then you get to the place of acceptance. That's the last stage, right? Of grief is acceptance. And we just don't think of these things in our life as micro griefs, but I feel like they kind of are. And when you have practiced going through the seasons, or oh my God, I keep saying seasons, the stages of grief, you get better and better at it. Not that anyone should ever be really good at grieving, like, wow, you're so good at grieving. But you see these people, you know, who've been through hard stuff, like they've lost family members or they've had all of these terrible things happen, yet they're still happy. And you're just like, what is that?
Yeah.
I personally don't necessarily think, maybe they just literally are always like that and they never had that. Typically, the people who can handle hardship and still are happy, I think that they have had years or experiences or things that have strengthened that muscle of micro stages of grief, of getting to places of acceptance, and that is surrendering. Like, that's what we call that. And I think for you, for me, I went through that before kids. So it's not that I've necessarily had less of that in my parenting. My kids definitely haven't had as many struggles as many do. But I just, you know, my child had a fever just recently at 6 weeks, and I had to take him to the ER, and then I had to put him on antibiotics. And I mean, the me before kids, I mean, how dare you ever put your kids on antibiotics? You're going to destroy their whole microbiome. You know, the judgment of like, yes, why would you ever do that? And I see that in people who are my patients or people who follow me of just, you know, well, that's not what you should do. That's not what you're supposed to do. And I know that. I know that my like antibiotics in a kid isn't great. And on the flip side, if I didn't give it to him, he could have died.
Right.
And I have caught myself, and we've talked about this many times before, the acceptance that I had with my C-sections, the acceptance that I had with having to take him to the ER. At first, you know, you go through these quick micro grief moments, mm-hmm, of denial and then, yes, you know, anger and then, you know, all the things. But I can get to that place of acceptance so much faster where, I mean, I maybe had a few hours, not even, of resistance or fighting or upsetness that I had to give him this antibiotic. And I know more than most people the impact of an antibiotic on a child. Mm. But sitting there in turmoil or anger and anxiety and just like that suffering, it's because you are not accepting your reality.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And sitting in that anger and turmoil does nothing. It does nobody any good. Nothing. And that's exactly, I think you're actually highlighting exactly what is happening to me. I've been in a slow 9-year long grieving process.
Totally. But Morgan, my grieving process of our infertility journey was 6 years.
Yeah. God, this is kind of blowing my mind right now.
Because, you know, I can talk about our infertility journey so like nonchalant now and like, it's going to be fine. Like all of these things. I was not fine. Yeah. I was not fine during our infertility journey. I would, if someone said, well, you might have to do IVF, I would, like the amount of shutdown, I couldn't even say the word IVF. Yeah. I wouldn't even go there. I wouldn't even talk about it in therapy. I was like, no, that's not happening. That is not an option. Wow.
Such denial.
And, oh my God, the denial. It's extreme.
And that's I think the denial thing that the therapist was trying to highlight to me is like, you are denying reality. Like, why are you, like, right, it is. It's like standing in front of a volcano and being like, nope, no, it's not going off. It's not. It's not. And it's like, it is. It literally is. Like, you need to run away from the lava now. It's like, but I would just stronghold because other parts of my life, this is why, because I had learned from a little girl, if I want something, I just have to work really hard and I'll get it. Mm-hmm, if I wanted the straight A's, which I got, if I wanted to get into a club, if I wanted to be second chair in orchestra, if I wanted to be like the starting volleyball player, if I wanted to do whatever, I just had to work my ass off. I mean, it's not like it came easy all the time, but I'd had that loop, yep, experience of my own input and the control. Again, this goes back to the control. And so then when children came into my life and it was like, that doesn't work anymore. I was just like, no.
Yeah. No, you and I are the same. Yes. And we have gone through the same experience, but at different seasons. Mine was before kids. Yours has been with kids. And it's not that I won't have more of that, but that's literally what it is. And that's how I feel. It's like a muscle. It's like a muscle that you have to train. And the training is really hard. Really and hard. How long it lasts is on how much, really maybe how weak your muscle is, because it's once you get to the place of acceptance and it is subconscious. It's not like I sat there when we were in the ER and I was like, I'm now going through the stages of grief. I'm going to go to a place of surrender. Like, it's not like you know that. It's like you just do. You just are.
Because it's your coping mechanism now. As an adult, you've learned to, this is how we have to do it and get through it. Yeah. And so, yeah, I guess that's probably what it is now I'm finally in this stage where I'm so fast at getting to the acceptance and then pushing myself through the uncomfortable being like, well, and then what? Because I think that's where I would increase my suffering by stopping my mental process at like, I can't do this because, and then I've had to take myself through to the other side to be like, okay, well, and then what if happened? What? So what? So I'm tired tomorrow. Okay. Big whoop. Like, is that ideal? No. But am I going to die? No. Or like, okay, I, you know, oh, one of my kids is getting sick again. Like, okay, par for the course. Like,
yeah,
for the next 2 weeks, we might be kind of cycling through the sickness in the house. But I think beforehand, I would be like, no. I would be digging my heels in and I'd be like, no, I really don't want this to happen. I really don't want this to happen. Mm-hmm. As if that does anything. It does nothing. It's not like I can control it. It's going to happen.
Denial,
so the sooner I can just get through this place where I'm like, well, we're just going to do the best that we can. And like, yeah, we might have to cancel some plans. We might have to da-da-da. And I don't know. I guess it's been so mind-blowing for me because it's also happening completely like in the moment so fast. And it's soothing me. It's maybe a little bit of like reparenting too, because I'm like learning from Wes what he does in his mind. And I'm like applying it in my own mind. And also just like, I guess, getting through the stages of these micro griefs. You're so right. I love that idea because it's like fast. It's like a little 2 second, like boom. Or sometimes it's maybe a couple minutes or whatever, or a couple hours. But it's like you go through all these things. Oh, we have a special guest.
Oh, hello.
Oh my goodness. See, like this right now. So she slept for 1 hour. She normally sleeps for 2.5 hours. And I think mm-hmm. that first time mom me would be like, oh my God, the whole rest of the day is going to be shit because she's mm-hmm. going to be feisty and fussy and whatever. And it's like, okay, like, first of all, maybe not. That's another thing I've learned is like maybe what my expectation of the like bad side of this, because I held myself to perfect expectations, but like what I'm thinking is maybe going to happen is not even going to happen. So who mm-hmm. knows? Just wait till, you know, you see what's going on, I guess. But then also about expectations, I'm getting so good, I think, too. I don't know how this interplays with this idea about grief, or maybe this is just like maturity and wisdom and stuff like coming from years of this, but I think I'm just like finally, well, it's the acceptance of reality too. It is acceptance because I'm like, I'm not going to put this standard on myself that this experience is going to be like perfect. Like, why would I do that? You know, like we were going to the hot springs the other day in McCall, and that can be kind of like a lot with four little kids. It's super fun. And I wanted the super fun aspect of hot springs. And I, in my mind, I had this kind of idealistic, like, oh, well, like I'll swim. It'll be so great. Da, da, da. But then I had to be like, no, probably someone's going to cry. They're going to get cold when we're trying to get dressed again. Probably someone's going to slip. Someone's going to want to leave. Like maybe she'll cry. Maybe she won't like it. Maybe we won't be able to get in because this website is kind of shady and I don't actually even know. We're going to drive the 45 minutes there that we might not be able to. So I kind of like went through in my mind quickly. It didn't take any brain power at all, but I was just sort of like, okay, like this is on the docket. Like this, because then I'm not shocked. Then I'm not disappointed and I'm not shocked. I'm not like, holy crap, this is something I didn't account for. And this is also, I'll just play interplay, something that you and I both, I think, have a huge passion for when it comes to helping women is like helping to educate them about what can happen in the fertility space, what can happen in the pregnancy, birth, postpartum space, so that they're not shocked. Because I think that especially birth is an easy example where like, if you were not expecting certain, if you could, because you didn't know, like the idea that the sentence, I just didn't know, makes me so sad because that's how I felt with my first.
Yeah.
And it's like, if we can educate people about just the base level knowledge that they need to understand about their bodies and physiology and the way that things are going to go and what to expect and blah, 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 that I feel like takes a huge portion of that I just didn't know, and it can slough it off so that people are not like completely left in the dark, shocked, leaning on other people to tell them what's going to happen and how to do it. Mm-hmm. When in reality, you know, like obviously it's good. We need to lean on our professionals and our support people, but humans make mistakes. They might have a bad day. Like I think about the woman who told me that Gage wasn't tongue and lip tied.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh,
And he was. And then how much that screwed up my whole postpartum with him. And it's just like, I can't blame her. I can't blame that situation. If I had known anything about that scenario, I would have advocated more for myself. I would have dug deeper, but I just was kind of like, again, it was just something I didn't know. And I feel like with birth too, there's so many things to be aware of in the way that like interventions can go and how important it is not to have fear, because fear will increase your tension and then increases your pain, increases the interventions that you don't want in the first place, et cetera, et cetera. And having that awareness and knowledge going into it can completely shift the way that the birth goes. Sorry, you guys are going to hear Sunday kind of complaining because we're going to finish up this podcast.
That's okay, because we're moms and we're talking about women who want to be moms. So if you don't, then I don't know. But I mean, I think the same thing as we've talked about before sort of is I think if a person, to me, perfection if you want to strive for perfection, the thing of perfection is this. You know the ideal and you exercise the muscle of acceptance of whatever will be. Because I don't, you know, the perfection is not what actually happens. It's you can be, and you won't be perfect. So perfect is like, you can never be. But if you want to strive towards something, if you're a person who's like, but I need to strive towards something, what you strive toward is knowledge and education so that you know what to expect, how to do things, you know, to whatever. And then you practice that muscle of acceptance and surrender, and that will serve you well in every aspect of your life, whether it's your health, your work, your being a mother. Once people in your life start passing, like, it's, to me, if we could create a perfect society, it would be people who know what to do. You know, they do the best things. It's not like we ignore that. It's not like on our fertility journey, we're like, well, I'm not even going to look at that because I need to accept the way that my life is right now, which is that I'm super unhealthy and full of toxins and all of this stuff. Like, there is a reality to the fact that that might prevent you from being a mother. You know, you need to know certain things of, you know, like you with a lip and tongue tie. Like, if you know that a lip and tongue tie could prevent you from breastfeeding, like, you might not have changed that, and it would have impacted your children's ability to have breast milk, and that would have changed their trajectory. Like, we always want to strive for what is optimal and ideal, obviously. And that always goes along with practicing surrendering and acceptance of the reality of what is, and holding both. It's both and, right? It's gaining our knowledge and it's practicing. Because what we see, both of us in the super crunchy community, is the lack of that acceptance. Yeah. And it's like, well, no, this is what you need to do. And in the conventional model, maybe it's all acceptance. I don't know. There's like the lack of actually striving toward anything. It's like, oh, I'm infertile. Let's just do IVF. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Or, I mean, like,
you're just accepting maybe too quickly.
Right. Like, oh, I have a cold. I'm just going to like take, or I don't know. Or like, oh, I just have high blood pressure. Like, whatever. I'm just going to go on meds and not like try to actually get to the
hospital. Yeah. You just accept it. It's like, there's a level where both are unhealthy in a way, but you have to have both. You have to have both. You have to have the knowledge and the empowerment and the striving for always to like know what is the best if you could, and then the acceptance of what the reality of what is. I mean, that is, to me, the perfect formula, whether it has to do with motherhood, with parenting, with, you know, everything. I mean, you even see this in people who've been diagnosed with a disease, you know, that may be terminal, like cancer. And, you know, you obviously don't just roll over and accept like, oh my God, you know, there's a level where sometimes you fight for it and you do all these things, but at the same time also going through those levels of grief and getting to this place of acceptance, because otherwise you just see suffering. There's so much suffering in that.
Yep. And you know, so not making yourself feel guilty if you don't, if like what it was that you were striving for isn't working now for whatever reason. You know what I mean? It's like we have to kind of quickly go through the phases of, man, that really sucks. That's not what I wanted. Or I didn't know, and so then I didn't do that thing or whatever. And it's like, okay, I'm not going to continue to beat myself up about it. It's sort of the same thing. It's like sticking into these negative mindsets of like, I don't want this to happen. It's like, no. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, it did. Okay. Or it is. And then on the flip side, like, okay, yeah, you didn't want that, but we're not going to make ourselves feel guilty. We're just going to be like, This is
reality. And now what's the next best step?
Yes, exactly. You know, like moving forward.
So now with my son being on antibiotic, I'm like, okay, that wasn't what I wanted. Obviously, that's like very not ideal. And I went through the quick stages of grief. I have now come to a place of acceptance. Let's make it as fun as possible. You know, like, I'm not like, every time I give him the antibiotic, I don't have the energy of like, oh my God, I'm destroying your life. Like, your gut's going to be terrible. You know, it's just like, this is what we have to do. It's going to save your life. It's going to be great. And what's the next best step? Okay, the next best step is to get you probiotics, because I know with the knowledge that that will be good for you, you know? And it's like, not that I'm perfect. No one is perfect at this, but my husband's also very good at this too. We're married to really great guys where, you know, like, let's say something happens like catastrophic as a parent. Let's say we're not catastrophic. That's very dramatic.
Like, whoa, but where are we going right now?
Yeah. Like, let's say like my daughter breaks a glass, you know, and what I love about him is I feel like I grew up in a household like this. Not as much. My parents were awesome, but just I've been around it more where the parent would get angry, you know, what'd you do that for? Like, blah, blah, blah. And there's a time when you definitely teach lessons and have experiences. But what I love about my husband is, let's say that happens, you know, maybe, you know, why did you do that? Or what happened? Or how can we prevent that from happening? But he moves through the stages so fast versus getting stuck. Mm. And then it becomes like it ruined the whole day. You know, like now you're pissed off. And like the whole day is now ruined because this accident happened or this thing happened that we didn't want to have happen. Instead, it's like we address it in the moment and then we move past it and move through it. And it doesn't taint the rest of the day. And I thank him for that all the time. I'm like, I just love how much you don't get caught up in these things, but it's probably the same kind of thing. He moves through these stages, you know, and gets to acceptance faster. Okay, I've now accepted that this is broken and now we have to clean this up and it's going to, you know, make us late to the party or whatever, like whatever it is. And I think that's another tool in parenting of accepting what is, that even when things, accidents happen or things pivot or, you know, the tire blows out on the car and now we can't go to the thing, you know, instead of being angry and mad and all of that, yeah, it's probably people getting stuck in the season or the stage of grief of anger, which yeah. Maybe I was exposed to more. I'm like, why do I keep coming back to that?
Well, it's like this is like mental resiliency in mm-hmm. in it all is mental resiliency. I think what we've been saying is like, can we be faced with something challenging and move through it and then regain a normal mental, emotional, and affect state?
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, some people will get stuck and then just mm-hmm. hamster wheel it again and again and again. And it's like, this is where therapy to me is like mm-hmm. a non-negotiable, so important thing. Because if you notice that, I'm just going to encourage anybody listening, if you notice that that's you, you're the one that will kind of get stuck in that, or you're having a hard time with any of these concepts, whatever. It's like life. Okay. Like we will all prioritize and spend money on exercising, going to classes, equipment, whatever it is, educational things, whatever topic that we're interested in, or pottery classes, or we go to like a wine painting thing, or we do golf. Whatever, because like those are things that we value and we feel like are cool. And I feel like having some kind of self-development mentorship on whatever level it is, if it's talk therapy, if it's EMDR, if it's spiritual therapists, if it's body workers who are helping work out physical trauma that's been stuck in your body, if it's whatever, there's so many. But on the level of like our soul and our self-development, I mm-hmm. feel is we leave ourselves to do it alone.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the only way. It's like books. It's like you and books and podcasts, and like you'll just figure it out. And it's like, okay, well, and that is helpful. But I just think that I would be a completely different person if I didn't go to therapy for these types of situations and reasons of like, I would be that person that was stuck beforehand and it would be, you know, ruin the day or whatever, or I would just mentally ruminate. And it's like, it doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to be suffering internally. Like this is mm-hmm. your life. This is your one life. And not to put the pressure on, but it is true. Our kids are watching us and they are going to learn the resiliency of, oh, the glass broke. Mom was kind of mad, but then she cleaned it up and then it was fine. And then she didn't hold me, mm-hmm. she didn't hold a grudge against me all day long.
Yeah.
Like she got over it. She was emotionally resilient. And then we had a great day. And like,
yeah.
I didn't mean to break the glass. It's not like anybody means to do these kinds of accidents.
Right.
And so it's like, why would we hold it? It's like, golly, what a miserable place to grow up in. And I think, mm-hmm. our parents grew up in really dysfunctional household settings where children were like, you know, the whole seen and not heard and just completely like ignored and emotionally neglected. Mm-hmm. And so it makes sense that like maybe we didn't get a ton of that. This generation, the millennial generation, is often made fun of because of the gentle parenting type movements, which I think a lot of people they misunderstand as like being just really lenient, and it's not. It's being emotionally aware and intelligent and then teaching your kids those skills so that they can move through all this stuff faster, and then they can just become more emotionally and mentally resilient human beings and adults mm-hmm. who are not having these like negative coping mechanisms or staying in these adaptations that then hopefully the ideal is that they're not going to have to be going to therapy so much as they're adults. But even then we will still mess them up somehow in some kind of a way. We're not going to be perfect and that's okay. But I don't know. Anyway, I just like, I'm glad that we had this conversation because I feel like it's such a cool thing. It's like an evolving feature, I guess, in my life and yours too. I think all of our lives, it's not something that anybody's going to ever be like just done with. Like you're never like, oh, check the box. I'm I'm an emotionally resilient person. Like, I never need to work on it again or whatever. To me, at least. I don't think it works like that. I think it's something that we continually are building upon, strengthening that muscle, getting to the next layer. And there's so much benefit there for ourselves and our family and everybody around us.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, so just as a wrap up, what we talked about maybe with accepting reality and what is, are just moving through micro grief moments, and how we do that and how we build the resiliency is working on ourselves. Like you said, going to therapy, yes, doing all this stuff, identifying our triggers, working through that for someone who's like, okay, this all sounds good in theory, but what do we actually do? You have to work on yourself.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens. And so when you break down your own traumas and triggers and all of that, then you can then move through these stages of grief faster and you don't get stuck, and then you can get to the other side of it. So that's amazing. I feel like this topic is so needed. I'm so glad that you brought it up and that you shared. And I think that, yeah, it's going to be an aha for a lot of people. So thank you.
Hopefully. All right. Thanks. Kids get sick. It's natural and normal. And there are things we can do to support their immune systems naturally that help not only with symptoms, but the progression of the illness. I've made a course that highlights all of my top immune support remedies and home care methods to support your children, from newborns all the way through to big kids. I discuss herbs, homeopathics, nutraceutical supplements, targeted nutrients, using nature as medicine, hydrotherapy practices at home, and more. The Winter is Coming webinar is a natural cold and flu course for kiddos that you'll want to revisit again and again. Find the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.